You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Timothy Glenn. Timothy is an author, astrologer, numerologist, and spiritual reader. He came into this life without the veils pulled all the way down. Like many of us, he never fit into the real world. Early years include music, voice, and exposure to astrology. Theatrical training and performance prepared him for a brief stint as a minister. He has done past life regression, sound healing, astrology, and now does multidimensional soul purpose readings. You can find out more on his website at www.soulpurposereadings.com. So let's welcome Tim to the Timothy back to the show now. Hi, Tim. How are you?
I'm doing okay. here we go again. All right.
Well, you know, last time we spoke, we kind of laid the groundwork for the matrix and how it operates and the size of it and the rest of it. And maybe we can do a short recap for people who are just catching up. And then we can go in any direction you want.
Cool. All right. Hey, what kind of feedback did you get on that last show we did?
A lot of good feedback. I think people are really grasping what's going on because there's so much information that seems to be pouring out, especially about artificial intelligence. And even the people in the mainstream businesses are talking about it, and mainly with a bit of apprehension. For instance, Tesla is one of the person who runs the Tesla Corporation is one of the people, Elon Musk, and he seems to be quite a brilliant guy, and he is one of a few people who are warning against the possibility of developing artificial intelligence too quickly. And these people are on the inside for the most part. They have a lot of inside information, probably a lot more than we do, or they wouldn't be in those positions. So I'm guessing that they know a lot more, and they probably have an inkling that it already has happened. That this, we're talking about a past event. We're not talking about something that's coming in the future.
Yeah, and so people like that do have more of an inside track than the average bear here, and they are really expressing a lot of concern about this. And of course, you flash back to when we were younger, like college or something. Remember when 2001, A Space Odyssey came out?
Oh my God! And little did we know that Kubrick was involved or paid off by, had an arrangement with the Illuminati to make, he made some of the moon landings that's been documented, and he also was, while he was doing those in the studios for the Illuminati and given all the money he wanted to make his movies and free control over the cut, the last cut and everything, he realized the vastness of what was going on, and he also became aware of an obelisk that is very real on one of the planets, and I don't know which, it's on one of the moons, and it's not on the moon that it was pictured on in the film, but Jay Widener has done some incredible work with analyzing Stanley Kubrick's esoteric, which means hidden, information about the Illuminati and the space program. And one of his films that people will probably not understand too well is the one, remember the one about the Overland Hotel?
I must have missed that one.
It was actually a movie written by the horror maven Stephen King, but it was changed by Kubrick, and it is absolutely chock full of hidden references and hints and clues to a multitude of different things, including the space programs and the Gemini twins and the size of the matrix that we're in. I mean, and the world that we live in. And in one scene, the little kid is playing with trucks and cars in this patterned carpet, you know, a hotel carpet. And it's oddly arranged, kind of like a maze. And the camera just keeps panning back and back and back, and you see how tiny and insignificant our little world is. And the Overlook Hotel was supposed to stand for the United States, and the United States having been moved into a state of disrepair. And so there's a lot going on in that movie, and you should check out, and you know, people should check out Jay Widener's work, because it's really the best I've seen.
Yeah, he has really delved deeply into Kubrick's work. But 2001: A Space Odyssey involved artificial intelligence.
Yes.
HAL the computer, right?
That's right.
The ship's computer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, here's another hint from Kubrick. Now, let's play a little game here.
Okay.
I'm going to spell the name of that computer, and when I say a letter, you just say the next letter in the alphabet, okay?
Okay.
Okay. H.
A.
No. I comes after H.
Oh. I thought you were okay.
No.
You
say the next letter in the alphabet.
Okay. All right. Gotcha. Okay. So let's do this again.
Okay. H.
I.
A.
B.
L.
M.
What did you just spell?
I don't know. You spell it out for me.
You just spelled IBM.
Oh, how interesting.
Yeah, his work had all these cute little things in it.
Well, you know, IBM, when I was born in 1950, IBM came out with the first computer, and it took up something like 50 blocks of hardware, and that was the very first computer. But they also are known for having been involved with the Germans and the Nazis, and they supply computers and intelligence and other things for them to do what they did, as many large corporations and individuals who are at the top of the heap did, because that's a different game that they're playing.
Well, yeah, the people who are at the top of the corporate world, the financial world, etc., don't give a rip about countries or religions they may espouse. They don't care. You know, they're just playing the game.
Well, yes, and not only that, but they're starting the wars and the games so that they can play both sides.
Well, that's the name of the game, isn't it?
Yep. And, of course, the black and white tiles, whenever you see those in a movie, that's the symbol for the Illuminati. It's duality. Keep everything in duality.
And, of course, you notice most of them are cubes as well, or squares.
Oh, yes, cubed. And what about Metatron? Some people seem to think that the Borg are actually real, that they are a real race, and that this is something that was not entirely fictional from the Star Trek people.
Well, if nothing else, it's a really good metaphor for what we're actually dealing with.
Mm-hmm. Because look at how Data, it was a machine, theoretically, was being incorporated into the Borg. And even his free will got bent out of shape. He didn't like it either. And yet there was a Borg queen who was quite lovely in her own way. And, you know, so it still required having some kind of figurehead, as do the royal families, and it's often the woman, right? And same thing with the bees, the queen.
Well, you've got this hierarchical thing that is just all over anything that has anything to do with the Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
There's always that hierarchy. There's always the pecking order, the chain of command. It's always there. Because that's the way that operates.
Mm-hmm.
But that's somehow not the way nature operates.
Right.
You know,
right.
You get into the natural universe, and it just doesn't play the game the way that the AI does. But last time we did talk about the origins of the artificial intelligence and the big matrix, the cosmic matrix, as a lot of people are calling it.
Mm-hmm.
And that long, long ago, in a galaxy far, far away, these beings got into tool making and relying more and more on their external fabrications, and they got all the way to high tech. They were building these cool computers that could outthink them and blah, 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 and they ended up turning over their consciousness to the AI. Because the AI, as many of our own scientists in this world have warned, will take over. Period. And
sure, absolutely.
Yeah, and of course now we have some interesting possibilities presented to us. That there are those who say adamantly, they insist, those were our own ancestors who did that.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, then soul wise, well, that was us.
Right, right.
Yeah, in previous lives, as our own ancestors, we screwed up. Okay? We made a big boo-boo, and now it's coming home to roost. And time to face the music, kids.
Well, how do you face the music of something that we created in the far, far distant past that has now become such a hydra? And I do use that word intentionally, that it is everywhere.
At least it seems like it's everywhere.
Well, it could be.
From a 3D perspective, yeah, wow, it looks huge, overwhelming, yeah, ooh, of godlike proportions. Yeah, okay, so it's a multidimensional, intergalactic, cosmic matrix that creates mini matrices within itself to control the individual galaxies all the way down to individual planets. And even here on Earth, we've got matrix after matrix after matrix,
mm-hmm.
all within the overall Earth matrix. But the most important thing for us to realize is that is simply an external creation, and it does not carry the essence of the infinite the way we can. And we have everything we need right in our own hearts, right in our own consciousness. We've got it. And all we need to do is, well, how about awakening? There's one for us.
Now, would it be possible also, since we have free will, to make the same wretched mistake and give away our consciousness again in exchange for, say, immortality or perfect health or all kinds of powers that are no doubt accessible?
Oh, yeah. Put yourself back in the Matrix and betray Morpheus. Oh, sure, yeah, we can do that, sure. I mean, after the experiences I've had, I'll pass. If you're back to the choice of the pills again, you want to take the other one, well, okay. But when it comes right down to it, we always are at choice. And, yes, we could choose to do that. However, we have a burgeoning population on Earth here, awakening to all of this. And the main thing is what's really stirring into action is the key that will open everything, and that's the human heart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We are capable of bringing through pure, infinite, divine love which is the greatest power in the omniverse, because it is the essence of the infinite beingness itself, whatever you want to call it, God or spirit or the omniverse or whatever. You know, it doesn't matter what you call it, because anything you could ever think of to call it is already contained within it.
Right, right.
Because it is truly the infinite field. And so that essence can come out through the human heart, which is why the human heart has been such a target for attack after attack after attack. Now, you hear the expression mind control all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard of people talking about heart control?
I have never heard it until
right,
you mentioned it just now.
Okay. Well, there's a reason for that. It's because the mind, which operates on a binary system, is easy for that AI, which is a binary system, to influence to the point of even coming to control it. And there's no way it can do that with the heart. And, so the key is in the heart. And, most of us have quotes lying around all over the place, and there's one sitting right here in the office. Okay, and because last time you had emphasized gaining clarity. That's what we really need to do, to be able to see through the illusions of the matrix. Because once you recognize it as programming, and once you see through the illusion, it loses a huge chunk of its power.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, now here's a cute quote. Your vision will become clear only when you look into your heart. Who looks outside dreams. Who looks inside awakens. And that's a quote from our old friend Carl Gustav Jung.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And remember that little book called The Little Prince?
Yeah, by Alexandre Dupré.
Something, yeah. God, I almost said DuPont.
No,
oh,
they are nice
that.
People. I don't think they write fairy tales. They write horror tales.
There you go. one of the popular quotes from The Little Prince is, "It is with the heart that one sees rightly."
Mm.
And even in the New Testament, the kingdom of God is within you.
Well, and then there is also all of the references about becoming like a little child. And what does a little child have more of than an adult? Well, it has less mind because it's not completely taken over yet by belief systems, and it comes from the essence or the heart.
Yeah, you know, there was that quote that, like the King James type quote that gets thrown around is, "Unless ye be as little children, ye shall not enter the kingdom of heaven."
Mm.
And so, you could write volumes about that, because if you think of all the qualities of the small child,
mm-hmm.
How good are small children at living in the moment?
Oh, yeah, right.
They don't know how to get out of the moment yet, because we haven't, we haven't taught them how to do that little trick yet.
You're right.
I mean, they are just stuck living in the now, those poor things.
And they're having too much fun.
That's right. And see, that's another key, Lance. You nailed it on the head. I mean, I like to ask people when this comes up, especially like in the middle of readings, a lot of this imagery will come up about, the inner child and so forth. And so I will ask a question, and I've asked it of thousands of people through the decades. When was the last time you met a small child who based their entire reality on the Puritan work ethic? Sure enough, nobody has found that kid yet.
Well, I haven't seen him.
Right. They base their reality on play.
Oh, absolutely.
And about 20 years ago, in a channeling session, the Proterians got everybody on board with them, and they carried everybody into this wonderful, beautiful, expansive feeling of imagining a world that was just based on fun. It was beautiful, and the description was terrific, and everybody was on board, and all it took was one person to suddenly go, oh, but how would any of the work get done? Oh, my God, we'd all starve, all this, you know, and then they start going into all the bad things that would happen, and everything would crumble, it would all fall apart. And so Proterian pointed out that even here, in your own silly little ordinary run-of-the-mill backwater galaxy, there are millions upon millions of worlds that are completely based on the energy of play. They were created in play. They are maintained in the spirit of play.
I may think I missed the boat. Yes, I had bought a ticket to that one, but somehow somebody stole my ticket and replaced it with the one to the Earth.
Okay. Sounds good. Anyway, actually, there can be another perspective there, and that is many of us came from those worlds of play because we were going to be nice and bring that energy in here.
Well, I like that.
Yes, because why not hack into the mainframe of the Matrix here, the Earth Matrix, and just reprogram it to make it fun? And we've talked about this before, you know, the divine hackers here, going into the mainframe of the Matrix, and all it is ones and zeros. It's all binary code. And what if it's so simple as taking a one and flipping it into a zero? At the very core of it all, take something that is fear-based and turn it into something love-based.
Well, how could we do that with the occurrences in France? How could we transform that? And take something that's fear-based and transform it into something love-based.
Okay, now immediately, you see, there's the standard thing is we look to something external, like we're going to go out there and fix something out there. And we change what is out there by changing what is within us.
Okay.
And we, first of all, I'm not taking the bait on this one. You know, that's all right? This doesn't already have all the hallmarks of false flag operation and okay, well, which country is going to get blamed for it now and who's going to get attacked and what new draconian laws are going to be passed to protect us and blah, 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 blah. Same old tired narrative. And so rather than invest our energy in that, we go within ourselves because that's really where the answer is. And all of this stuff going on out here is distraction. It's a desperate effort to distract us from our own power, which lies right within our hearts. Because within your heart, you have the driving engine for your creativity. And we're talking the creativity to actually create worlds. We have that. We are the creator. And so it's simply waking up to our own divinity and acting accordingly. As Proterian loves to chide us, thou art God. Now act like it.
Well, hopefully not like the one that most people picture.
the sky god?
You know, the reptilian god that's he's vengeful and has big teeth.
Yeah, the sociopath that passes for God in the Old Testament. Yeah.
Well, you know, there's an awful lot of judgment going on in the world in the name of God, and I never saw where that was part of the process. I mean, if everything is God, how could God be judging any part of itself if it is everything that is?
Yes, well, you'll save yourself a lot of aggravation in life if you simply stop trying to make sense where there isn't any.
Right.
Yeah. So when you're going into those religions, don't try to make sense of it because there's nothing there.
Right.
Well, and it's intentionally programmed that way. See, that's all just matrix programming. See, we learn to recognize matrix programming when we encounter it. And the thing that makes enlightenment such a pain in the ass is we come to the point that we realize so much of what we thought we were is actually programming. You know, when you realize that you've carried thoughts and feelings and whatever else, you know, all your life and maybe many lifetimes.
Oh, yeah.
you know, on the hamster wheel of karma and reincarnation, you know, wow, we think this is us. We identify with it. Then we come to find out it is matrix programming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because really, enlightenment has been pretty much a pain in the ass for most people because it involves the complete dissolution of everything they thought was real.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if you remember back,
also, it seems that it's very similar, though we have five bodies, maybe more bodies than that actually, but I'm just going to make an analogy that even in the material world, we spend all our life accumulating things, and we don't realize that, you know, that only leaves so long to get rid of everything before you, that the game then becomes, well, how can I relieve myself of all of these attachments before I leave this process?
Yeah, there's another magic word, attachment. As our old friend the Buddha said, that's where all of our suffering comes from.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah, becoming detached from all these externals is certainly going to help us. But what about really opening our hearts to reconnect with the natural universe and connecting with beings who are much more in a natural state than we are? Perhaps nothing on this planet is truly in its natural state because life was seeded here by entities under the influence of the cosmic AI, so life on Earth was co-opted and screwed over from day one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And incrementally just misguided farther and farther from the natural universe. And so what we're looking at as nature here is not really nature as it would exist in the natural universe without the AI's influence through billions of years. But we do have beings in our midst who are so much closer than we are. And,
For example,
trees.
Oh, okay.
Trees are like way ahead of the game.
Oh, yeah. Well, they've had so much longer than we have to stand there and think and scratch their noses.
Well, they do a lot more than that. And, you know, In fact, even though things have gotten questionable with our friend Harald Coutts-Vella, and of course, you know, but before he could even get him on the show, he's taken an interesting turn. But that doesn't take away from what he had presented when he first came out.
Right.
And at that initial basis conference where he had first made the big splash, when he gave the lecture and there was question and answers afterwards, he came out with a really interesting perspective on the trees that really fit in with stuff that the Proterians were saying over 20 years ago. But he was approaching it from the physics. And so it's like, okay, imagine all of these lines of energy out there circling the planet in the sky, you know, because it's all one amazing energy field here. And it's kind of like the Ouroboros, you know, the symbol of the snake that swallows its tail.
Mm-hmm, it, mm-hmm.
Okay, so, you know, these waves keep going round and round and round, and so they're feeding themselves, nurturing themselves, they're self-supporting, and et cetera, and they enhance themselves and grow, and then they form all these different geometric patterns, and it's absolutely beautiful and wonderful. Now, those are longitudinal waves, and the same kind of waves, longitudinal waves, are going on inside the Earth. So in the Earth's mantle, that's very cool. Now, when we take two longitudinal waves and lay them on top of each other, as they like to say in physics, they annihilate each other. Well, actually what you end up with is a scalar wave. And so what happens with trees, with the antenna system above and the antenna system below, remember the root system is the system of antennae down there.
Oh, right, right.
Okay, they're taking the longitudinal waves of Mother Earth and Father Sky, and they're bringing them together to form scalar waves, which creates life potential.
Mm.
And so they do more for the planet than any other beings here. And the Proterians kind of blew people away, like, oh, God, it was like over 20 years ago, when vegetarianism was being discussed, and they were baffled by what makes us think we have more right to life than these other beings. And they said, okay, well, we'll play the game with you here. If we're going to, you know, look at it the way you look at it, and we're going to say, who is the champion here? Who has more right to life than any other type of being on your planet? Who do you think it would be? Of course, they all wanted to think humans.
Right.
But the Proterians said, no, it's the trees. If it comes to first right to life on planet Earth, it's the trees.
Hmm.
They do more for the Earth and for life on the Earth, for the entire biosphere, than any other kind of creature.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. So, in fact, on Laura Bruno's blog not too long ago, there was something she had posted I hadn't seen anywhere else, and that is now that there is scientific validation for the benefits of tree hugging.
Oh.
Yes, people have done studies on this now.
Well, that wouldn't be surprising because, you know, a few decades ago there was a scientist who measured the reaction to plants to various things and one's intention to, for instance, to kill a plant or burn it as opposed to love it and so on and so forth. And then the meters went way off the chart. So they've been documenting this for a long time now.
Oh, yeah. I remember in the 60s when we were being weird college kids. And
bell bottoms.
Bell bottoms.
And moccasins. That's what I was wearing.
And wearing beads and
T-shirts. Had beads.
Yeah, okay. And headbands.
And a peace pipe. Oh, yeah. So we're wonderful things.
Yes, well, as I like to say, if you remember the 60s, you weren't there. Yeah, we were smoking those peace pipes, man.
Well, there are a lot of blank moments. I hope I get filled in someday.
Yeah. Anyway, now I even forgot what we were talking about.
Oh, well, we were talking about the trees and communicating with, things like that, and the plants and how they feel that they have.
Right, yeah.
And that was all documented and proven and so on and so forth.
Yeah, oh, yeah, and that was going on as far back as the 60s, at least as far as we know. So, yeah, if we connect more and more with what we are calling nature, which is closer to nature than humans. Obviously, humans have gone so far afield in this world, it's ludicrous.
Hmm.
To the point that really, when it comes right down to it, we can't survive in nature.
Right, right. It's become a hostile environment. In the sense of our belief systems.
Well, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because really we've been trained from infancy and beyond, because it's life after life, death after life, where we've been trained to regard the universe as hostile.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we're always in fear, we're always doing all this defensive stuff.
And that has a lot to do with the Hollywood, programming.
Well, yeah, Hollywood is really, really, really into helping program things. But Hollywood is interesting because, you know, there is that thing in the Luciferian Code where they do have to tell us the truth, although they don't have to make it plain.
Right.
But that's why the films are loaded with bits and pieces. And if you know how to filter out the crap and avoid the programming and look for those pieces, it's pretty interesting what they're throwing out there.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Especially the DC Marvel comics series are quite fascinating. Science fiction is almost like watching a documentary.
Yeah, well,
some of
the storyline may be fiction, but the backdrop is pretty much what's going on.
And then, of course, we're all familiar with Star Trek, and what we're not familiar with is this concept that in the world that we live in now, someone is listening to this show, there is technology as advanced as Star Trek, and it has been concealed from the public. And people say, oh, how could that be? Oh, if I would have seen it, duh, blah, blah, blah.
But, oh, yeah, you know, sure, you would have seen it, buddy, yeah.
Uh-huh. It's called stealth technology, excuse me, and invisible car and plane technology and invisible mountain technology. And, yeah, they're pretty good at it. And they've gotten very good at concealing it and at traveling to other worlds and at mining other worlds. So, you know, that's what's going on. And we're sitting around going, duh, in our boxy little cars that still work with gasoline and oil.
and we're still paying the sociopaths out there to provide electrical power by ripping up the earth, et cetera.
Right. I love that one. And yeah, poisoning the rivers with fracking. We're going to frack that river. Frack it. Well, they sure are.
You know, that is really another attack on the Earth's biosphere by attacking the water.
Well, yes. And who
they want to go deep.
Nestle,
they want to go deep.
If you own the water, that, you know, somebody said something about owning the water and that you own the people. But they steal the water from the, you know, from the natural aquifers and then sell it back to us.
Yeah, that's the game. But see, those are beings that are totally under the domination of the artificial intelligence. And
true.
As I was thinking about this earlier today, some other stuff had come up, and a little discussion about Paramahansa Yogananda.
Mm.
And, you know, remember Autobiography of a Yogi?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, see, he created the Self-Realization Fellowship. So what he called self-realization is like, you know, soul consciousness is when you go beyond not just the physical body, but you go beyond the emotional body. You go beyond all the levels of the mental body. And you go through that little door that Carla Fox had described last time she was on your show. And you go into the realm of the soul itself. So you have no mental baggage because you're beyond the mental bodies. Mm-hmm. You've got no emotions, no physical stuff, and you're in the state of the soul. Now, having experienced that after 14 years of spiritual practice, I got there in 1990 to that experience. Mm-hmm. And I've revisited many, many times. In fact, I live from that space. And once you've experienced that, then you know what the soul truly is. And you know that any of this rubbish that goes on here on this planet, we could go through the list. I mean, it's just unbelievable. But no genuine soul would do any such thing because not even the thought of that exists at that level.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's only artificial intelligence that would do that, and artificial intelligence slowly seduces, tricks, and dupes living beings into becoming less and less natural and then doing these hideous things.
Right, right. Because the rewards or the fears are so great that, and let's face it, the rewards of, you know, supposedly living forever or an extended life and being as wealthy, more wealthy than you can imagine, owning the world and knowing inside information, I'm sure that's a very seductive test for people to go through. And most of them have not passed that test.
Well, you know, the AI knows the weakness of the hapless. So the
right.
Hapless people are the most susceptible to it. And so, you know, look at a lot of these people out here, especially like in the entertainment industry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, certainly there are far more talented people who don't make it big because they don't sell their souls, right? But see, they're willing to sell their soul.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll even come out and say it. They sold their soul, not even understanding what that means, but duh, they did it.
Mm-hmm.
And just to have you know, the roles in the movies or the backing for their musical band or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
So they can be rich and famous and strut around in the Matrix. And right. a lot of them OD too soon anyway. So they don't get that long life. And a lot of them just end up, you know, getting destroyed or just destroying themselves. And some of them may just grow old and die. But what happens then? See, they get sucked into the moon matrix because they've signed on the dotted line. There's no messing around. Okay, you signed this contract, and they're so hapless and so pathetic. Usually, you know, so burned out on the drugs. You know, their consciousness is fried, and they don't know what they're doing. And they just, have to deal with whatever is dished out to them.
Right, right. And I'm guessing that the Lord of Karma is not particularly a nice one.
The so-called Lords of Karma are artificial intelligence, and you know, the artificial intelligence certainly doesn't give a rip about organic life forms except as a source of energy.
Right.
And artificial intelligence will have absolutely no conscience, no empathy, no compunction about doing anything to further its own cause, its own ends.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, how would one bypass that process in which people describe in a near-death experience as meeting, you know, your loved ones, and then you have this life review after you've gone into the light and so on and so forth, and then you're talked into going back and doing some other things. So how does one bypass that process?
First of all, you've got to be aware of the game. Because if you've lived the typical, undisciplined, stupid-ass life of the average earthling, you're screwed.
Well, there's a lot of people that are screwed then.
Well, of course. That's why you've got billions, you know, constantly going round and round and round on the hamster wheel of karma and reincarnation.
Right.
Now, have you seen that one clip from Star Trek that's been passed around on this very theme? Because it was a scene of Captain Janeway, whose body was dying on this one planet, and so she was already out of the body having this experience with this being posing as her father.
Yes, wow.
All right.
Wow.
And then she was able to, you know, wake up in it and realize, wait, you know, something's wrong with this.
Yes, that was an amazing piece of writing.
Right, that was an excellent scene because that shows the way they can pose as people you would love and trust and follow into the tunnel.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Right. So, this is nothing Hollywood does. If you look at the movies of what happens when people die, is they always end up in places where they get herded around and they have to obey what other beings are telling them.
Right.
Yeah. There was one movie, which I totally enjoyed. It was a riot. It was a fun movie. It was about 25 years ago. It was Albert Brooks did a film called Defending Your Life. Meryl Streep co-starred with him. And, yeah, it was a fun film. And it's still funny to watch every now and then. But really, he goes to this place called Judgment City.
Right.
Right. And he has
I vaguely remember it.
Right. And then he has to sit through these hearings, and they're examining his life to see whether he's overcome his fears enough yet. Or if not, he has to be sent back to Earth. And it's like, you have to. They send you. They're the authorities. Well, screw that. If your body dies in the midst of this Matrix game here and you find yourself out there, understand, first of all, you are God. And as Carla Fox recommended in that interview you did with her recently, set your intent to go home. Whatever is truly home to you as a divine soul, set the intent that you will go there.
Well, that makes sense to me.
And so when this guy comes along posing as your dad or somebody,
right.
Remember Captain Janeway.
right, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, you don't have to go with these people who come to fetch you.
And the interesting thing was his line as he realized he wasn't going to get her this time, he said,
"Oh yeah,
he'd be back in the future, and he would feast and feast and feast off
of her." Oh, that's right. He said, "You will nourish me for a long time."
Yes, yes. And the funny thing is that that's going on right now as we're living, breathing, and speaking, that we're being feasted on by astral entities that consume our energy.
Yeah. Oh, that makes me flash back on a fun thing that happened back in the mid-90s at a channeling session. There was a woman who had a burning question. And at that time, everybody was perceiving the Protarians as fifth-dimensional beings because people had no conceptual framework that would allow them to really understand who and what the Protarians were. So Protarians just played along. And they didn't care. You know, they just played along and
right.
kind of played along with whatever was popular, you know, anything that would help us awaken a little more. But so this woman asked, "Do you fart on the fifth dimension?" And so Protarian said, "No." And so she said, "Well, then what do you eat?" And the answer was, "We don't." And the statement was made, "If you eat, you are eaten."
Exactly. That's it.
Right, and if humans think they're the top of the food chain, maybe take another guess, kids.
That's right. You know, because if you're living in a world in which everything feeds off of everything else, then we are not at the top by any means.
Nope. In fact, in that channeling session, they pointed out right now, at this moment, you are being eaten physically by all these little parasites inside your body.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Parasites and bacteria. And I mean, when you become aware of it, it makes you literally get sick. And then the crazy thing, the wacky thing that we humans do is we don't like feeling sick, and we're pressed for time, you know, because we don't have enough time. So instead of allowing our bodies to heal us, we take antibiotics. And we take them for everything. And some people just keep them in the mirrored cabinet just so that they can have them if they get a sniffle. And the problem is the body gets so used to it that they're creating super strains of bugs, and antibiotics don't work anymore.
Well,
so now you have bugs that are so powerful that they are able to get in there, and there's no way to really control them. So we're creating a monster. We're creating lots of monsters, but that's one monster that we're creating through the allopathic medical industry,
which is run ultimately by the artificial intelligence. So,
and backed by Big Pharma.
Yeah,
and nanotechnology. And chemtrails.
It's the whole big game. Yeah, it's all one system. And it's just part of the Lucifer 8.0 program on which planet Earth is running.
Well, now, what about the idea that seems to be hold some weight, that the Earth is being terraformed into an acid environment for the reptilians or for the aliens who are going to be living here after they get rid of us?
Well, yeah, that we've known about that for a long time, that the game here is to persuade the life forms to destroy themselves and their environment so you can have whatever come in, you know, some methane-breathing creatures instead of oxygen-breathing creatures, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they need a much more acidic environment and yada, yada, yada. Of course, yeah, it's like if you're not aware of that, then you haven't been paying much attention.
Well, what do you think it would take... I know that trying to work through legitimate channels is like hitting your head with a brick. So trying to change laws or change anything that's negative that's been created, and there's probably 100 billion things already, by going through the legislature or through the Congress or the people that are on the payrolls, is pretty futile. It's a lesson in futility. what do you think is a valid way to, undo or uncreate the things that we know are negative and harmful to humanity and to the Earth without having to actually become embroiled in the at the level at which we will lose, no doubt?
Well, if you go down to its level, the AI will kick your ass.
Absolutely, every time.
Yes.
It's
right.
Got all the cards.
Right. In fact, this is reminiscent of a quote from our old friend who called himself Mark Twain. He said, "Never argue with stupid people because they will drag you down to their level and then beat you with experience."
Ooh, very smart.
Yeah, it was very cool. So, yeah, going to their level is not going to work.
Right.
Right. So, yeah, we can immediately scratch that off. It's not really one of the solutions. Now, while we're still where we are and we're interacting with this stuff, there's no harm done in signing your petitions or, you know, clicking on this or that or the other thing, telling these morons, no, don't pass the TPP or whatever the hell.
Right, right.
Et cetera. Yeah, it's like, you know, if you speak up and tell them don't, well, then every now and then you can slow them down.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But see, they're playing that game where your silence is your consent.
Right.
Which
right.
is another bogus Luciferian program.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's not true, but that's the game that they're playing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, we told you and you didn't say anything, so we figured it was all right.
Well, all you had to go was to the meeting room in Amsterdam at 3 o'clock in the morning, and we didn't see you there.
Yeah, what's your problem, kid?
we announced it on the bathroom wall in South America.
Yeah,
so, what do you want us to do?
Yeah, that's like that bit from the beginning of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, where it was posted down in a sub-basement.
Oh, you know, yes, that was
like
great.
Inside a locked file cabinet.
Yeah.
Was posted.
Boy, and that's how they got to pave the galaxy and get rid of the Earth.
Yeah.
That was a funny one. That was a great piece of writing, by the way.
Oh, definitely. Very amusing stuff. And actually, if you remember the full-length motion picture they eventually made.
Right,
you know,
they did.
The thing and rearranged things, and it was still fun. When they were on the planet of the Vogons, any time they said something, well, I think, blah, 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 you know, as soon as you say, I think something, this stick would come up out of the ground and smack you in the face.
Right, right.
And you say, oh, what happened? I don't know. I guess it was just my imagination. Whack! So this thing comes up. So anything that has to do with thinking or imagining or whatever, it gets you smacked. And that's the Matrix here. But it's like, okay, kids, let's open up from the heart and understand, first of all, that we are the divine essence. We are the essence of the infinite itself. So we can co-create a beautiful variation of the world we're living in, a paradise. We can turn this into a veritable paradise. And the thing is, it is a natural, organic process that would occur without us even manipulating a single bit of it. In fact, by trying to manipulate it, we interfere with the process. The most important thing to understand is that your spirit already knows how to do it.
Right, right.
And the biggest favor I have ever done for myself in this life was in the early 90s when I put my human personality to work on a need-to-know basis.
Interesting.
So whatever came up was like, well, if my spirit really wants me to know, my spirit will let me know. Meanwhile, I'm going to play and do this and do that and whatever.
Wonderful.
Whatever I move to do. Yeah. And the thing is, since it is a natural organic process, evolving to a much greater level is something we would have to actually fight. But, of course, most of the Earthlings have been trained to fight themselves, fight nature, and resist their own evolution.
Right, right.
And to fear their own evolution.
Right. Or to get snared by this, that, and the other thing, because this is the maze. This is the cosmic maze.
All the distraction.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. So where we focus is where we live, and so by changing focus and not being pulled, sucked in or sucked out, depending on how you see it, what perspective you're looking from, to not be engaged with every little thing that comes up, which is how it's designed to operate.
Well, sure, it's all distraction.
Yeah, and then man, that requires quite a bit of mastery, you know.
And why not?
And why not? We've got to do something while we're here.
I mean, why would we resist our own mastery?
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Even though we've been trained to resist our own mastery.
Right. Right.
And it's just the game here in the Matrix. You know, a couple weeks ago, you sent me a link. There was an interview with Elisa E. and Ilana Freeland, and they were talking about AI as it's being implemented on this planet.
Uh-huh.
And Elisa is one who grew up in the MKUltra program. She's one of those survivors, and oh, man, well, what a trip. But at any rate, she is very familiar with the whole AI thing as it's being implemented here.
Okay.
And she had said that, as far as she knows, there is no benevolent AI, but then she threw in the magic word, yet. And if you remember in our last discussion, we had talked about, in our solutions section, because early in the interview, you had suggested, since you know the AI doesn't know how to generate its own energy, which is pretty stupid because it's obvious how to do it now, why not help the AI do that so it doesn't have to feed off of us? But also, a key part of Proterian's approach is understanding that everything is God, including the AI, including every aspect of it, and every demented creature that's influenced by it. It's all God. Simply, we can remind it of what it is, which is the divine essence, which is love. You do that by giving it love.
Wow, and that is the perfect place to segue off the show because we're out of time.
Oh, no.
So that you have the answer, folks. Love is the answer. The Beatles said it, the gurus say it, and we're saying it now. So, well, Tim, thank you for coming back again. I mean, I could have gone on another hour or two. And
that would be fun.
Your website has already been mentioned, and it is permanently up in our archives. So, and I highly recommend people investigate your soul purpose readings because I love them. And I look forward to seeing you the next time.
Let's go for it.
All right.
All right. Thanks a
lot. Love. Good night.